Genesis Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations, and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Welcome. Inner Sight is simply seeing that which is always present, but not yet fully recognized. You have within you the ability to see yourself and the world around you in a new way with new eyes. So, stay with us and together, we'll look at the world and ourselves with inner sight. Our topic for today, values to live by. And before we explore this topic, I'd like to say a few words about Alice Bailey. Alice Bailey is the founder of the Lucis Trust, and she wrote 24 volumes of literature. And those 24 volumes of literature are the main inspiration for the dialogue that you hear on this program. And the following thought is from Values to Live By. It's published by Lucis Publishing Company. It's part of Lucis Trust. And Values to Live By is a leaflet, which is available at no charge, and I'll be talking more about that later. We'll be happy to send it out to you for free. But this thought is, I think, is quite interesting about values. New values to live by are desperately needed if our planet, as we know it, is to survive. Human consciousness is opening to the realization that there are desirable spiritual values to be built into every aspect of life, values which concern essential attitudes of mind and heart. It seems that we're afraid to have a public discussion of values today. Why is that?
I'm not sure, but I think it might be linked to the fear of religion entering into the public domain, into the secular realm, the division between church and state. There's also probably a dislike on the part of many people of any kind of moralizing, and the acute emphasis on individual freedom and liberty in this society, which means that each person is a citizen, free and equal, and able to determine his or her own path in life. There's the politically correct movement, which I suppose makes people afraid of saying very much about issues such as values for fear of offending somebody. But I think we have to find a way as a society to discuss values and to put a real focus on them. Our nation is expressing values in everything that it does. It spends exorbitant amounts of money on defense and war, and yet people in New Orleans are still waiting for their government trailers. They're homeless. Our schools in many areas are underfunded. Medical care for the poor people in society, and even for some that are middle class, if they don't have the necessary health coverage, is woefully inadequate. All of these things say something about our values, and we are a long way from affirming the equality that is declared in the Declaration of Independence.
Yes, there are different degrees of values. I mean, there are the most basic values that everyone needs at first, to the value of a place to live and the value of a home and enough food and survival values. And so those have to be taken care of first before one can really be concentrating on the more subtle values of rights and human rights and the basic rights of that humanity is demanding.
And problems are, I think, becoming more and more urgent with the growing globalization of the world. The internet, the means for travel, the intercommunications means that people don't live unto themselves, and even whole societies can't remain apart. solutions to problems now demand international cooperation. And yet self-interest seems to be the watchword. Self-interest on the part of individuals and on the part of nations, because nations can be just as selfish as individuals can.
That's right, because nations and corporations are made up of individuals who are just projecting their own inner values, whatever level those values are. So it's an individual can be just as selfish as a group or a corporation or a nation, for that matter, depending on the leadership of the nation and the values that they espouse and the conditions in the world. And if everybody is looking out for number one, for me, then there will be a struggle.
And I think we've reached the point, I hope, where we realize that separativeness, greed, competition, and irresponsibility no longer work. They just aren't successful approaches to life. They are outmoded, you could say, because the new problems require a global perspective, and these selfish attitudes are inharmonious to life. So perhaps, in a sense, the present situation does play on people's self-interest, and it demands a review and a restructuring of values. Alice Bailey, in her writings, had some very interesting things to say about values, and one of my favorite comments from her writings is found in Education in the New Age, when she said that all children must be taught two things: the value of the individual and the fact of the one humanity. And the value of the individual, I think, is something that's well understood in American society. This is a society that caters to individual development, individual freedom. And if anybody thinks an individual can't make a difference, just think back to that lone man standing in front of the tank in Tiananmen Square. If you remember, a single human being stopped a tank in its tracks. So each individual does count, but so does each person's relationship to the one humanity.
And each individual counts because there, within that individual is a living divine soul. And that's the one thing that it isn't always apparent. You might not see that way from the certain some individuals that we have around us in the world. There, but the soul is buried deep there. But there is a soul, and that individual is in the world as an incarnation of a soul, and therefore it has the rights of a divine being to work out its plans in the world, no matter what it may be for that particular individual.
I think there's something caused by the soul that affects our values, because at a certain moment in life, thinking back to that man, for example, in Tiananmen Square during the revolution of, 1989, who stopped the tank, any of us can find ourselves in a confluence of circumstances and energies that can create a real point of crisis for the soul. We've talked so many times on this program about how crises offer opportunity to the soul. And that's where our values are most thoroughly tested. We have to be ready for these points, because I think they come to everyone, unexpected, unbidden, unprepared for, unless we have really done our self-examination as to what values guide our life well in advance. Not only in those moments are our loved ones watching, you could say our souls are watching too. How will we respond?
That's right. The soul is present whether we know it or not. It's more present in some people than in others, but it's still there. It provides life and it provides consciousness. And it enables us to walk the earth in the one life of God. So, it represents the core of each individual, and our sense of values, I think, comes from the very presence of the soul. If we have a sense of values at all, it is because of that soul factor that's deep within us. It represents the core of our being, and that's what pursues us to seek values in the first place.
And I think that on that level of the soul, which is one in all human beings, we can identify certain values that we all have in common. And one of these is a love of truth. Now, we could say, and some people do, that your truth is not my truth. Truth is relative. I don't think necessarily that truth is relative so much as that our perception of the true is relative, depending on our spiritual evolution and understanding. Sogyal Rinpoche, a Buddhist teacher, said a very enlightened thing about truth. He said, spiritual truth is not something elaborate and esoteric. It is, in fact, profound common sense. Profound common sense. And I think we all know spiritual truth when we hear it. But what has to be retained in our understanding of truth is that layer upon layer we expand our understanding of what is truth. And what at one stage of the way might seem to us a great spiritual principle or value, at a later stage of the way is superseded or transcended, or maybe the word is subsumed by a still greater principle. And the lesser principle always has to give way to the greater. That may explain why people have different perceptions of truth.
Yeah, that's inevitable, I guess, given the focus of consciousness where each particular person lies, where their consciousness lies. And because sometimes they have this revelation of what they perceive to be truth, and it sort of transforms them, and they hang on to that perception and think that it's the only truth. And that's when, they usually end up in going through some kind of crisis mm-hmm. at a certain point, because some other truth comes along to shatter that little lesser mm-hmm. truth, and then they have to wake up to that fact.
Shatter is the word, because when our thinking becomes fixed, a stage of crystallization sets in. When we think we've nailed it and there's nothing more to be said, this is the truth, this is the value, and that's it, mm-hmm. discussion ended, that's a danger sign, because always we should be seeking to expand our understanding of truth. The Ageless Wisdom says that truth that is grasped by the intuition is straight knowledge. I like that term, straight knowledge, not circumvented, not circuitous in the way we receive it, but it's just like a bolt of lightning. It's uncorruptible and it's unassailable, because it reaches the mind in a direct way, and that truth that comes from the intuition is perceived whole, complete, and unadulterated. There aren't too many instances one can point to where one perceives truth on that level, but they do come to all of us, I think.
For those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight. Our topic for today, values to live by. We have an offer from Lucis Trust today, and that's the leaflet. It's a leaflet, the title of which is Values to Live By. And really, we've based our shows on the values set forth in this leaflet. So you might want to look at some of the values on this. And I think they would be also wonderful values to teach students, or to talk with your own children if you'd like to, because I think that, I know for me, one of the most profound conversations I had was with a professor when I was a young student at college, and he said, Robert, one of the most important things that you can do for your life is to develop a code of ethics and to stick to it. And that planted the seed about what a code of ethics is and what value should I have. And I remember it made such an impact on me. So you might want to give us a call and ask for this leaflet, Values to Live By. Look at it yourself and think about what your own values are and how they measure up and compare to these values set forth in by the Lucas Trust organization as far as values to live by, and take a look at them, compare them to your own, and perhaps even teach them to your children or your students. Talk about it, stimulate a discussion, perhaps even have them write a composition. But if you'd like the leaflet, Values to Live By, please call us, ask for us. Call our toll-free number, 1-866-695-8247. The easy way to remember it is 1-866-NY-LUCIS. LUCIS is L-U-C-I-S. Think of 1-866-NY-LUCIS. We appreciate your donations. They really demonstrate your support for this program, for what we do, and we like to continue doing it. So thank you very much, and please continue to send those donations to us. They are tax deductible, and if you'd like to continue donating, or if you haven't donated before and would like to start, send your donations in the form of a check or a money order to Lucis Trust, L-U-C-I-S, Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And also, we have a website, by the way, and the website is www.lucistrust.org. And if you key into that website, you can find out a lot of information about Lucis Trust. And also, I guess the primary reason why people key into the website is to listen to the previously archived library of radio shows that we have. We have so many of them archived there for you with many different themes. Let's get back to our show on values. Sarah, Dell, what are some of the highest values that are spoken about in not only Lucis Trust, but Alice Bailey, the founder of the mm-hmm. Lucis Trust?
Well, a love of truth is one. Another is the sense of justice. That's a deeply spiritual value. And there's a wonderful quotation from Martin Luther King that I just love. He said that the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. And that really strikes deep into my soul, that is true. It bends towards justice. That all things in the world gravitate, grow toward a just resolution. And that gives me hope when I see wrong being done, when I see people suffering unnecessarily, when I see the unfairness of life, which we all witness, that somehow in the end it does work itself out. It does bend towards justice. That, I think, is an intuition from the soul, because anybody who looks at the world would say that's not necessarily true. But it takes into account, I think, a longer period than simply this one life, and it looks at the meaning and value of life from more than just the outer material plane. He also made a statement that's on the monument to the civil rights movement in Birmingham, Alabama, that quotes from the book of Amos in the Old Testament, "Until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream." Again, that sense of power that drives forth justice.
Yes, it seems to be related to karma. Anyways, it's bringing things into balance, mm-hmm. Bringing your life into balance. If it gets off center, it brings us, the law of karma tends to bring us back to the center again. And that's where justice is meted out. It seems it isn't punishment, and we shouldn't look at it that way so much as it is bringing into balance and trying to find that middle way, that middle ground.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if the prison systems of the world approached justice from the standpoint of restoring balance within society and within the particular individual criminal's own life? Rather than punishment, there should be a restoration of the spiritual equilibrium that was destroyed by committing an act that is considered criminal. And what you're saying, I think, was touched on by Alice Bailey when she said that the great law of spiritual retribution requires that justice be meted out, But she said that hatred will close the eyes of justice. You cannot deal or dole out justice in a spirit of hatred, because then you are blind to the soul that is within the person who has wronged you. Justice has to be meted out through a spirit of spiritual retribution, which again implies that restoration of equilibrium.
Mm-hmm. Yes, hatred is just, it just incurs more karma on yourself, mm-hmm. actually. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't solve the problem.
She also said that justice is linked with the establishment of right human relations. She said when those conditions of right human relations are met, then we'll have peace. So many good people put the emphasis on peace. They want peace, they want a world at peace, they want an end to war. Yes, we all do. But justice is what makes peace possible, I think, because justice is linked with the establishment of right human relations. And if you don't have that, you can't ask for peace, because there's an imbalance that has to be corrected. Another value that I think is deeply spiritual is a spirit of cooperation. That might sound pretty obvious, but I think the first lesson that a child should be taught is the fact that he's a unit in a group of similar units, that he's not an island, that he's not a world unto himself, but part of a much greater group. And each member of that group is expected to contribute his particular gift to the whole. If children were taught this, I think it would help them begin life in a proper perspective.
And cooperation also is dependent on the active energy of goodwill. It brings goodwill into action and provides that the very energy that enables a cooperative effort to work out and to build relationships. And that's the very touchstone, that, as it says in the book, that goodwill is the touchstone that will transform the world. And that's one of the great values of goodwill, the energy of goodwill, and applying it mm-hmm. directly in your cooperative relationships.
Goodwill, I think, nourishes the spirit of understanding in people. It creates a condition in which they are willing and able to make an effort to understand another point of view and another need, and it fosters cooperation because of that. The cooperative spirit is the secret of all right human relations, and yet so much of modern society seems to emphasize competition, not cooperation, but competition, winning, overcoming, being the first, getting ahead, being victorious over everybody else. If you think about it, that utterly defies the whole idea of cooperation, and many children are taught just that, to compete, that you have to fight and win your way over everybody else. Yes, I think the child has to advance and move forward and grow and attain, but at the expense of others, is that really a victory?
Krishnamurti once said that about our education system, that it was all wrong because as soon as you compare two people, you've lost both of them with
yes.
your children. You know,
very good. Yeah.
Very much in sync
you've
with what you're
both.
Saying.
I think we often think of cooperation as a kind of socialization. We're taught as children to play nicely with others. But I wonder if we've ever thought of cooperation as something we should do with our soul, cooperating with our soul, with our higher self. Have we ever thought about the fact that our higher nature has a plan, a contribution to make that needs our cooperation? That's another view of cooperation that I find kind of refreshing. Another value that is spiritual and of soul quality is the sense of personal responsibility.
Yeah, that's a very big
one. That's a big one.
That's a big one because it has exactly to do with the bringing forth of the soul into the world, because it is said that a sense of responsibility is the first indication that the soul is beginning to make an impact on your life. And if you have that sense of responsibility, not just take care of yourself, but for all those others around you, and to help fulfill the needs of others, then you're allowing that soul energy to play outward into the world.
That's a nice way to put it. Responsibility makes me think of that famous line from the poet John Donne, "Ask not for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee." We can't look around and point to somebody else who should make the world a better place or do something about injustice or correct the lack of resources for some of the poorest and most deprived. We have to start ourselves doing what we see needs to be done. We have to show a sense of responsibility and not wait for somebody else to take care of it. And perhaps the last value we can talk about today is serving the common good. I think the sense of the common good, the good that is shared by all, is an effect of the attractive force of the Christ, or if you prefer, the Messiah, the Imam Mahdi. By the way, I was astonished, I think, this week to hear on McNeil Lehrer a discussion of the Imam Mahdi among Muslims who are awaiting the return of the world teacher, just as Christians await the return of the Christ and Jewish people await the return of the Messiah and the Buddhists await the Maitreya. Whatever you call this entity, that willingness to think of the common good is an effect of his approach towards humanity. And we see this writ large in the development of the new group of world servers, the subjective network of servers who are working in all fields. This is definitely a sign of commitment to the common good. Perhaps as a way of closing, if people would like to request a mantra, they can say to themselves, we'd be happy to supply it. It's the noontime recollection, which says, "I know, O Lord, of life and love about the need. Touch my heart anew with love, that I too may love and give."
Please take advantage of our offer from Lucis Trust. And that's values to live by. Values to live by are the values set forth by Lucis Trust and part of their beliefs. And they're on a leaflet and card. You'll be getting both the leaflet and the card. Give us a call and request values to live by at 1-866-695-8247. The easy way to remember it, 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of 1-866 New York Lucis. Lucis is L-U-C-I-S. You've been listening to Inner Sight. Now we would like to close with a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Thank you.